people use these is like, hey, I'm going to just say, hey, I want to do XYZ. Help me make a website. And, they just kind of give it a general idea, or maybe it's very detailed, or come up with a plan, blah, blah, blah. One of the things that has really helped me is thinking in pipelines and having sub agents almost like your own employees. So having tests along the way to validate output that you're having.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Defender Fridays. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders here at Lima Charlie, and I'm going to be hosting today. Max is fighting some fires, so you get me, which is a close second, I think. For those of you who are new to Defender Fridays, this is Lima Charlie's weekly series where we sit down with security professionals from across the industry to dig into the defensive side. There's just so much cool stuff happening, and it's just a fun way to learn about some of the different things that people are working on. Today, we're joined by one of Lima Charlie's great friends, David Burkett. He's been with us since the early days. David, do you maybe want to introduce yourself and we can go from there?
Yeah. So again, I'm David. I work for CoreLite Labs. I do cybersecurity research and all kinds of different things. I also run the Celestial SH Lima Charlie extension, which, by the way, I've added some new features. If you unsubscribe and resubscribe, it'll tell you all of the hosts automatically that the binaries are on, let you, do retro hunts with the latest corpus of like hashes so you can see if you've missed anything or if anything, new might have been caught, all kinds of fun stuff. And it lets you allow list or exclude signed binaries if you want, or just Microsoft signed binaries. But
yeah. And David's also recently written a book on aliens, which we're going to watch a trailer for at the end. So stick around and we'll go through that. But I don't want to distract from the topic.
Yeah. Also, before we started this call, I was thinking, weirdly enough, I was talking with one of the whistleblowers you and I and Max have known each other for nearly a decade now. I was thinking back to how long it's been.
Yeah,
I think it was like what, 2017 or 18?
It's about 8 years. You were there right at the beginning, and actually got us one of our first. You were working for what ended up being one of our first most important customers that kind of helped us do the thing. So, David's got a very special spot in our heart.
Yeah,
but well, you're here today to talk about LLMs, pipelines with agentic SecOps.
Yes, so I have had a very interesting relationship with LLMs. I've been pretty conservative on them. I've both seen like the power of them, but I've also seen, like some of the downsides and people either misusing them, for example, prompting things to get the question or the answer that they want rather than, what maybe it really is, or just believing whatever it says, just outright, just not understanding the actual limitations, that kind of a thing. So, that and just my own experiences up to a certain point had really mixed results. But the past couple of months, and especially since I've started using tools like Claude Code, which allows you to use like sub agents, my perspective has completely changed. Like I said, I've always thought that the AI kind of capability was there. I've been kind of, skeptical on it getting too much better than it was. And honestly, I think I've been totally wrong. And one of the things that I've really learned is powerful is a few different ways of thinking whenever you're using these tools. So a lot of the ways I've seen, and again, this is just my own anecdotal experience, but people use these is like, hey, I'm going to just say, hey, I want to do X, Y, Z, help me make a website. And, you know, they just kind of give it a general idea, or maybe it's very detailed, or come up with a plan, blah, blah, blah. One of the things that has really helped me is thinking in pipelines and having sub agents almost like your own employees. So having tests along the way to validate output that you're having. So for example, let's say I'm, you know, approaching a piece of detection logic. You know, that's actually a great example. You can go through and have your Lima Charlie actually instance, say for example, do something on a host to trigger the your endpoint, maybe use that Atomic Red Team kind of built-in extension, and then basically have your AI agency, if it's detected, you could do things like pretty much like, hold on, let me think of how to best explain this. Have it automatically deploy rules. And one of the things that I've seen whenever I'm doing detection is whenever I deploy a rule, if I see a lot of false positives just right off the bat, just kind of flooding the alert, probably there's something that needs to be tuned within it. You guys might meet my dog here in just a second. not always the case, but having something like an AI agent being able to see the output of those just automatically and then self kind of identify, hey, I need to disable this rule. I need to do things like maybe look for ways to tune it. There's all different kinds of cool things you can do there. But when you're writing rules, even you can have it say, hey, here's this threat intel report. Let's look for all of the different ways that you can go through and build detections off the findings off of here. But then you can go through and have it test its output with different agents along the way. Thinking of it like a whole detection pipeline. So rather than having a single agent do each piece of the pipeline as a whole, coming up with maybe even specialists for different parts of your pipelines, and then having it gated and having tests to validate, you know, that things aren't hallucinated along the way. You can really raise that fidelity just massively.
And I find that the sub agents are such a good way to preserve the context. You know, like the intelligence of the LLM drops off at like 70,000 tokens or something pretty steeply. So if you can farm out like the, you know, reading of data and those sort of like large input tasks that produce small output to the agent and to have that output sent back to the main LLM, you can sort of preserve that context window as you're working.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the cool things too is you can have it instruct the agents to spawn with totally isolated context. So it's coming in with a fresh perspective, which is super useful. Like if you're trying to detect like hallucination, for example, or maybe like a good use case that I use, especially when coding, is I have an agent that's just dedicated to evaluating the unit test that my development agent develops to make sure that it's actually developing tests for what the intended goal of the outcome is versus just matching the either the code or the test to a buggy implementation. You can also give the agent's personalities, just say, hey, you know, be kind of a dick, and you really make them justify it, have them debate and come to consensus among each other. All of those kind of things, and you can really control that and start thinking about these rather than as a single maybe agent implementing a task, maybe using sub agents to like do things in parallel, but more thinking of them as, hey, have these almost like a group of your own employees, and maybe even build pipelines and test along the way to make sure that you're getting the desired outcome.
Can I add something to that real quick, David?
Yeah, please.
Anytime that one of your agents, whether that's your primary frontier model that you're using to steer things, that's handing things off to sub agents, whether also within that same frontier model or local sub agents or whatever, whoever's in charge, the one that is making the most important decisions, I highly recommend that the very first thing or one of the first things you tell that thing to do is to turn its reasoning up from 85 to 100. And it will make dramatically better decisions. It will be very much more Steve Jobs, the asshole boss, but it's what you want. Just a pro tip from somebody who likes to read the system prompts.
If you, for a Claude code, if you do slash models, you have to hit the arrow keys to set it to max to get the max thinking. And you have to do that every time it launches. You can't just set it by default. Or maybe you can with like hooks or something.
You can set it by default as you launch it, the effort. They used to have the phrase ultra think, which like turned up in Rainbow and such. They actually brought that back, that it turns the thinking to extra high for that one response, which is kind of neat. So if you're mostly on medium levels of thinking for faster response and less subscription usage, you could say, well, I see you're having a tough time with this thing. I need you to ultra think on your response. It's just turning, it's the exact same as turning up the effort to extra high for that one conversation round trip.
Yeah, but it's more precise, right? Because it uses the metric by which they were actually prompted. So the thing that they set in the system prompts by default is they tell them that your reasoning is set to 85. So you are supposed to have a little bit of flexibility for creativity, but otherwise reason fairly well. That's not what you want for decision makers. You do not want them being creative. You want the dumbest of the dumb to use their creativity to surprise you. You want your decision makers to be thinking clearly.
Yeah, I also have some other recommendations too. If you haven't checked out the Trail of Bits default Claude code config, super recommend. They have a lot of really smart things implemented. Some things that have saved me a couple times, for example, they have a hook that blocks RMRF and uses trash instead. So if something gets deleted by your AI agent or something by mistake, it's way easier to recover. Super simple things like that. Another thing that I've found that's been super helpful is, so I've started using the idea of lazy loading and having local information corpuses in the in your like Claude.md or I think the agents.md is kind of the more open source.
Give them actual information that they can look up as ground truth, and you get dramatically better results from using LLMs.
Yeah, exactly. And so you want to be careful. So like if you fill your Claude.md up, that gets loaded every time you're adding just context that gets loaded that maybe isn't relevant to everything. So some of the things that I've done, and this was been with the help of the agents, obviously, giving me the idea, but like creating routers and designing the file, like, you know, the way that they're stored and saved. In a way so that like if my agent is loading, it has a local like YAML router file to say, hey, this is the category it's in. You can find it here, here, and here. And then it can just go pull the exact information it needs. And that gives makes it like super optimized. So some of the things that I've had, again, a lot of success with is I had it do a whole bunch of research around the or pull all of the latest academic research around like jailbreaking and prompt injections and, you know, just creating secure pipelines. You just secure MCP server use and build a local security corpus and basically had it say, hey, I want you to also included the WASP top 10 and all that jazz, but said, hey, I want you to by default, anytime you're spinning up subagents, or you're doing any kind of work, use this security corpus in that same kind of lazy loading way as needed to harden the agents. And what I found was whenever I would get a default agent prior to doing this, it would make some general kind of good best practices. But whenever you have it with the kind of state that I've kind of mentioned, it does a lot more. Like it'll allow list the websites that it can communicate with, to only communicate with ones with that are relevant. It does all kinds of different hardening techniques that just basically make your local development workflow a lot safer.
Are you using any kind of tools for building these pipelines? Or are you mostly like staying within the Claude environment?
Staying within the Claude environment. And onto the security stuff. Sorry, I've got a lot of words. I've shared this with y'all. I'll try to drop it in the chat, or maybe Chris, you can look in our conversations. But there's a a tool that can reduce your token usage with Claude by something dramatic, like 80%, because a lot of that token usage
What are you
comes from.
quantizing everything going in? Like, this sounds like, what was it, Onovo? Remember that VPN that compressed your data before it sent it through the VPN to try and reduce your data costs? And then Facebook bought them so that they could spy on all the teenagers' data.
Oh no, I didn't hear about that. But no, they've done something
Here, I got it.
clever and used like a local SQL database to do some caching, or for them to kind of do stuff with. I don't r
Help
really
them be able
understand
to
it.
figure out how to look up what they know.
Chris just popped it in here, and two other kind of quick
Context mode. Yeah, I'm familiar with context mode.
I dropped it in the chat, but recently the defensebench.ai site released the bots of the SOC version 3, kind of the different model comparisons on how they do in investigating the boss of the SOC. For those that aren't familiar, that's the Splunk
Splunk.
kind of open data set that you can use to, go through and do like an investigation, so to speak. But it basically compared all the models, and the capabilities, if you just look, even in the past couple of months, have kind of dramatically improved.
Yeah, I think we saw a big shift back in November and then one recently at near the end of January. There's been some really big leaps. And, if you ascribe to the exponential curve and being in the elbow, like those leaps are going to get bigger and bigger. So I was just reading that the LLMs have been doubling the tasks that they can, the length of tasks they can complete successfully 50% of the time every 7 months. And we're currently around 4.5 hours, which means a 40-hour work week is about 2.5 years away, and then a full year, like continuous problem working on a single problem, is about 5 years away. If we maintain the curve, right? But
I
I always
think
point to Moore's law, like we can do it.
the rate of acceleration is itself increasing in physics. That
Yes.
the jerk, right? We're strapping on more rockets to the ship, so it is not only accelerating, the rate of acceleration is itself going up. It is GPT-5.4, Claude Opus 4.6 are crazy, and the capabilities,
Which Opus 4.6 should have been called 5, by the way. People
It's
misunderstand how
all
big of a
labeling.
jump it
I will
is.
say that people mentioning Sonnet 4.6 in the chat, you don't get that many tokens even with Claude Max 200 for Opus if you're running things agentically and in the background and especially in parallel. And Sonnet's intelligence is pretty damn good. Unless you need
It's
that
fine
absolute
for,
frontier, I'm pretty impressed with Sonnet as well.
Sonnet is fine for if you know that what you need done can be done with monolithic chain of thought, yes, Sonnet is fine. It's reasonable. But if you need actual comprehensive planning as part of what you need done, hell the fuck no. Just period. Do not use monolithic chain of thought for reasoning because it cannot reason. It's like asking somebody to solve a math problem, but you're telling them they can't scratch anything out, they can't erase, they have to just write in one continuous motion the correct answer. Like, that's unreasonable. That is what you're doing, though, with monolithic chain of thought. It's doing a plan and then it's running with it, but it has no time where it can evaluate its plan and consider the merits of its plan and whether it should have considered alternatives and weigh those alternatives. It can't do that in monolithic chain of thought. Interleaved reasoning models like Opus 4.6 or like the newest ChatGPT 5.4, the top tiers, they can. That's the difference between interleaved reasoning and open monolithic chain of thought, is you're closing the loop on the thinking. So it can actually evaluate and assess its thinking and discard bad ideas before running with them. And that can save you so much headache.
That's interesting. I didn't know how that would work. Anecdotally, so knowing that now, I'd been using sometimes whenever I do kind of develop plans, both, and giving, I've always just considered Opus, as a layman. I'm definitely not an AI expert by any means. The kind
And
of
Opus is different depending on whether you enable it with deep thinking mode on or not. If you don't turn on deep thinking, you're not getting the whole point of Opus.
And the Trail of Bits default config will set that as well if you use
Yes.
that.
But furthermore, Opus doesn't know how Opus can think until you tell Opus what it's capable of. So if you're not able to do that, it's not going to magically use those skills, because how to use those skills isn't even in the prompt. There's 18 lines in the Opus prompt telling it about Opus, and it basically boils down to a whole bunch of tags that say thinking mode is interleaved, which, ooh, la-di-da, that tells him a lot. And then one line that says, you are Opus, you are the most sophisticated and intelligent of our models. Cool. So how about telling it how to use interleaved reasoning? They didn't even think to do that. So you have to do that as the prompter.
Yeah, well, I like using the different models to kind of come to a different, not the different thinking style, like the approach like the same problem to see if they come up with different ideas or findings. And then you can do things like just have Opus be the final say and be the consensus, but like look for different problems in different ways. I don't know if there's really actual value in that, but I also know that it's cheaper than using two Opus agents.
I mean, in life, whether it's AI or whether it's a problem that humans are facing, the diversity of opinions on how to solve that problem is definitely a good thing. Anecdotally, sure. I may end up talking about this one later, but I have done a bunch of agentic stuff for Linux kernel-based privilege escalation. It's been so fun, the most I've ever been nerd sniped. And I'll have, when I have a repeatable crash, I'm trying to turn that to privilege escalation, I'll have Opus and Sonnet and Gemini 3.1 and like another ZAI GLM5 all take a stab at it, because we're going to get some diversity of opinion. And then sometimes I'll have to come in manually and say, okay, Opus, look at these four prior runs and see if you can get it across the finish line. And that really does help compared to just doing one.
Yes. We spoke with one of the detection engineers at EY probably almost a year ago now, and he was saying they built something internally called precogs, and they have the three core frontier models sitting there in part of their pipeline. So when a security decision comes through, they will have all three of them look at it and vote. And then because there's only three, you always get a majority, which is kind of cool.
It's commonly referred to as the Council of Elders approach, and I do recommend it if you have the budget for it. But frankly, what's even better is having an expert talk to the AI. That's better than just having the AIs talk to each other about a problem. If you can actually get a human who knows their shit in the loop, all of a sudden stuff goes way up. Yeah. So make sure that you are constantly a gate and filter for final knowledge, and make sure that you're providing your LLMs with the information that they would need to know to make a judgment call on something without having to rely on them having hallucinated about the internet once. Because they did hallucinate about the internet. They hallucinated about it for several months straight. That was their training period. Think of it as when you have a dream at the end of the day, you know what happens, right? Like your hippocampus plays back all the emotions that you had throughout the day. And then your subconscious takes those emotions in that same series of beats. And in order to help you build memories, it plays its own story using those same elements to give you more points of connection to store it with. That's exactly how RLHF works. Like if you understand AI, like this all makes sense to you, that this is kind of what
you're
we're
dumping the buffer into long-term memory, right?
Yeah.
Yes. But what we have is actual ability to recall and reason off of our lived experiences, and we have real recallable information. What the models have from their training state is not real knowledge, but it is like a dream about the knowledge. And if you understand and start thinking about it that way, you'll save yourself a lot of headache and you won't run into traps. Because yes, it might be able to hallucinate very well and sometimes even very accurately about stuff that was in the training corpus. That is not the same as it knowing the thing. All it actually concretely knows is what you introduced in the context buffer, period. Anything else, you are taking a risk. You're playing Russian roulette with knowledge.
One of the things
Generally, we don't worry about hallucinations if the answer is in the context window. If you're depending on the embedded weights of the model, it will be just as confident whether or not it knows.
Yes.
The math does not have a spot for, am I confident in this knowledge? It is predicting the next token based on the training data involved.
Yes.
And it will be just as confident whether it knows or not. And if it's outside of your area of expertise, it's going to be really damn convincing of that.
Yes. And that's why you should make sure that you tell it how to reason and infer about things. And you should give it an order of operations. You should tell it that if a question is posed that it is trying to infer an answer to, it should source the solution for that answer first from context, if possible. If it can answer from what it knows, it should start there. If it can't, then it should ask the user where it can find that knowledge. If it can't do either of those, then it should go search for the knowledge. And if it can't find it on a search, then it should rely on inference based on the weights. And if you go in that order of operations, you will see a night and day difference with how LLMs perform for you. But you have to put that in the prompt. Sorry.
When we're all using ChatGPT-3 at first on ChatGPT.com, and we're copy-pasting code back and forth to our own editors and such, getting the human out of the loop was the right move at that moment. But that's kind of the whole thing of agentic usage. And any time you can have the model be able to compile and verify, have like an actual verifiable task that it can do itself, you're going back and forth between non-determinism based on vibes and AI as of that moment, and no, here's the deterministic
confirmable
check.
Like, facts.
Can you compile the Linux kernel? Is a pretty good
either you can or you cannot.
Check.
Yes.
Yeah, you can or you cannot. Can you cause an observable crash in the Linux kernel Kemu runner? Is my gate there of are you making this shit up or not?
I find that. Typically, within the computer science domain, you should be able to define test criteria that it must pass before things continue, and that strongly prevents it from hallucinating, especially
yes.
when you get it. And
but that's basic prompting knowledge, which you have because you're an intelligent user. Most people do not have that, including a lot of people that are vibe coding, including a lot of the influencers that are affecting other people's approach to LLMs and causing them to nonsensically vibe code. And it's causing us to get a whole bunch of slop coded shit everywhere. And it's driving me insane.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to hit on too, just real quick, because we're coming up on the end. I don't know, have any of y'all played with open code yet versus Claude code? And the reason that I ask is because you can do some pretty cool stuff with it in that you can also have agents use Gemini and ChatGPT as well as the Claude models, and then have all three of the different models reason and work together on task or even do things differently. And something that you can do on both Claude Code and Open Code is use open models or local models. So if you have a laptop that can support them, sometimes where if you want to save on your token usage for like money reasons, where you might have sent something to a Haiku model in the past, you may be able to use a stronger local model, like a higher reasoning one, to do that same task without using those tokens in your cloud environment or your provider.
Yes, and yes, do that. And any local model that you are using as a security professional, you should be thoroughly de-safetying so that you can get whatever output you want and need out of it without having to spend and waste tokens fighting the prompts and the guardrails. Period. Like, you should be using Obliteratus or something similar to fully deconstrain without affecting the weights of your model so that you get maximum capability, mind you, with maximum vulnerability. But if it's something you are using locally for your own research, I'm thinking particularly people who are trying to use them for CTFs or for bug hunting and stuff like that. If you are using any local models, strongly consider using a fully liberated one carefully and wisely, and you will have some pretty good luck with them, is my experience.
What did you say that was? I know the tool
there's
called
Obliteratus.
What is it doing again? I'm just not familiar.
It's effectively
it's the most advanced open source toolkit for understanding and removing refusal behaviors from large language models. So it strips all the safety guardrails off of your local model. Yeah. So you can
yes
The answers of how to build a meth farm are in the training data.
Yes.
It's just been trained not to give it out. So it is fine.
Similar to hacking.
Try to maximize the remaining intelligence, though you will lose a little bit of raw intelligence with this fine tuning.
A tiny
we try to minimize that while maximize the honest answers to things that were previously refused.
Yes. And, and if you want to discuss how to do similar to frontier models, only talk about that on Signal, because otherwise the AI shops will come after you.
On this happy note, we're at the end here. David, how can anybody get a hold of you if they want to talk to you more about pipelines? And
I'm on LinkedIn, just David Burkett, first name, last name. I don't really use much other social media anymore outside of that. You can also find me on my website, magonia.io, or just working, you know, through my work at CoreLight. And that's about it. I also, again, I have a book coming out called Lies Above. It should be out this spring. If you want to look at the trailer for it or watch the trailer, just search YouTube for Lies Above, and it's the UFO one. So, but yeah, the book, I'm doing something pretty cool. I'm going to have QR codes on basic.
Now, what's the book? Page. I'm sorry.
It's called Lies Above.
Same name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I'm working on the website right now, like actively before this call. So it's going to be actively changing if you're looking at it. So just keep that in mind. But I'm really excited for it. I've managed to speak to whistleblowers that haven't come forward yet, pilots. Chris Mellon in the trailer actually recorded that segment for me. Basically, you name it. I've been just amazed at the people that have been willing to talk to me. And
David introduced us to a guy in Washington who I then heard on the Joe Rogan podcast like 2 weeks later. So not that I'm a fan of Joe Rogan, but the fact that he was on there speaks to the credibility.
Yeah.
Or incredibility, I don't know. Maybe that's reverse.
Yeah, it's been wild. There was a guy that I met. So I think I might have told the story before, but a guy I met at the second Seoul Symposium, which is an academic conference on the UAP topic, his name ended up being, he's public now. He was in the age of disclosure. His name is Mike Flaherty. But basically, I was sitting at this table. We were eating lunch. And, I'm writing my book. So I'm just asking random people, you know, like, what brought you here? Why are you into the topic? Blah, blah, blah. And there was just a VC there. He's not there to fund the topic. Just basically, he saw something himself. He could never explain it. And he was just kind of curious and just kept up with it ever since. And as he was kind of describing it, he's like, I've never really been able to put it into good words. The guy, Mike, next to me was like, did it look like a bouncy house folding in on itself? Now, mind you, I've seen literally every documentary. If you go to the Reddit UFO VHS, it has every documentary on UFOs since the 1950s, which is just fascinating to watch in order, by the way. And I've read so many books. I've never heard that description. I've never heard it since. And what makes it interesting is the face of the VC lit up. And he's like, yes, I've never heard anything that described it, but it's exactly it. And that made me raise an eyebrow. So I was at that conference with the guy that I introduced Chris and them to. And I was like, do you work with Logan, which was the guy on the task force? He's like, no. I'm just a buddy and, in the Air Force, retired now. And I was like, okay. But, I just kind of took his word for it. You know, there's a lot of people in the topic, military, ex-friends, whatever. And Age of Disclosure comes out. This guy is on Age of Disclosure, former member of the UAP task force, talking about his medical effects from his encounter, and the people that have encounters have 25% mortality rate, and just how he became part of the study because of the effects that he had experienced and stuff. And I was like, man, I knew it. So there's just a lot of really fascinating stuff that I just never thought was there prior to a couple years ago. I was totally skeptical. So
I have to bounce. We got a workshop starting internally, so I'm going to bow out. Thank you so much, David. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, watch his trailer. It's awesome work that he's been doing.
Yeah. Thanks, y'all. I'm always happy to chat about aliens. ping me anytime. You can find me at my links, and it was good talking with everybody.
All right. Yeah. Take care, sir.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend. Subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.